Hi people and hello my Chili Con Carne crew, it's Chili here from Live Listen Erased, and I'm bringing you a end of year list. And this one's going to be the top 10 worst albums of the year, because not everything can be absolute gold when it comes to music, and oftentimes it isn't. So these are going to be the dishonorable mentions, followed by the 10 worst albums I thought of the year, for various reasons that I'll go into. So let's start with the dishonorable mentions, the ones that didn't quite make the top 10, but are still very bad. Kicking off the list, we're going to have the dishonorable mention with the Smashing Pumpkins album Autumn Part 2 and 3. I know I covered this last year when Autumn Part 1 came out at the very end, and I said this was a terrible album. It made the list, top 10 worst albums, and I said, mark my words, if the albums were going to follow the suit like this, it is going to be a very bad album. And it was. I've done 3 reviews on it for each separate album. I even did a special review where I just talked about all the albums at once. And this is a horrific effort by the Smashing Pumpkins. It just sucks to see a band that is so great and revered fall so flatly, when they can just achieve so much as well. So it sucks to see, you know, the greats just falling. It just sucks to see that Autumn is so terrible. I don't want to go talking about it too long. If you want to hear my in-depth analysis, go watch that video where I just go on a rant about that. Next up is John Frusciante's album 2, or I don't know how it's going to be titled, but anyway, the John Frusciante solo album that came out earlier this year in February. And this just makes the list purely because, I mean, you know, it's not a John Frusciante album in the sense of like what you would expect. It is an ambient pop, I don't know, it's an ambient drone kind of piece. It's just terrible. It sucks in every way. You know, I guess, you know, John Frusciante likes to do these weird and eclectic albums from time to time. It can be heard, of course, in various projects of his, but this just sucks, unfortunately. It's just terrible to listen to. I don't want to listen to it. You know, at the end of the day, it's like close to 2 hours long as well, which is way too long for this kind of record. So don't want to listen to it, and I don't think I'm ever coming back to it either. You know, it's just not very good. Up next is Saxon with their covers album, More Inspiration. And look, I just said what I had to say in regards to the review. It sucks to see that, you know, this band, who can write some pretty decent material at the end of the day, just doesn't really bother and just does a whole bunch of covers albums that are just very lackluster and just feel like, yeah, all right, we're in COVID lockdown, so we're not going to record anything, let's just do some covers here. It just, that's what it feels like to me at the end of the day, because, you know, there was this one, and there was, of course, the other album they did, Inspirations, back in 2021, and it's just a whole bunch of, it's average covers at best. Nothing really stands out. The songs they choose are okay, but, you know, these songs are just done in such a way that it's very forgettable, and I don't think the fans really care for this album. You know, a bit of a stopgap album or something like that, because, you know, who cares? From the group, they're going to be making a new album. It'll be out next year as well. Hellfire and Damnation, it looks like, at the beginning of January, so that'll be interesting to see what their new effort has to play out. But as for this one, this is just, you know, something that they had to get out during COVID lockdowns. I swear, it was just B-sides and outtakes from their previous album, and it shows. It really does. It sucks. It's a terrible album. This next one is quite painful to admit, but it's the Slipknot EP, the Adderall EP. Why bother? Why did they do this? It sucks to see that, you know, Slipknot is a band that many people would revere and say is one of the most influential acts from, you know, the early 2000s or late 90s, I should say, and has this platform that is way up there when it comes to the music that they've done, and they're really influential. So to see them come and do the Adderall EP, which is 3 of the same songs and just some other remixes of, you know, the same songs from a very shit-house album that was released last year, it sucks. It really does suck to see that they've fallen so far. And now with everything that's going on, you know, you've got band members leaving left and right, and it's so terrible. I don't see how the band is going to go moving forward. You know, the drummer has left. That seems to be a whole different kind of mess. What the hell is going on within the band camp? You know, Sid leaves. What's going on? What the hell is going on here? I don't know. And we've got a bunch of madmen running the show. So Clown and Corey seem to be doing their thing, and who knows? You know, it's all speculation at the end of the day as to how the turmoil is within the band camp. But there is no denying that the Adderall EP was just something the fans didn't need to begin with, and as such is a terrible EP from the group. The next one is going to be Seven Dust's album, Truth Killer. And look, I'm not the biggest Seven Dust fan, and I'm sure, you know, multiple fans will say this is a good album. I just don't see it that way. I don't at all see it that way. You know, I don't mind a few of their tracks off Truth Killer as well, but at the end of it, it just feels so subpar. A record full of tracks that are just average at best, and just come across as just a regular old metal album. You know, nothing stands out, so that's the most unfortunate thing, because, you know, like I said, there were some decent tracks, but it didn't stand out at the end of the day. So this very subpar album, of course it's not going to get the top 10 worst albums, because there is much worse, but I think it deserves a dishonorable mention at the end of the day, because who cares? This album came and went without a, you know, like a wet fart in the air or something like that. No one noticed, and no one cares. Speaking of albums that sound like wet farts, we have Paramore with their album This Is Why. And admittedly, yeah, I'm not a big fan of their records, but they do have some really cool tunes. You know, even their more modern stuff wasn't too bad and had some hooks that I did enjoy. But when you come to This Is Why, it's a lackluster effort by the group that just feels like this pop record that doesn't really fit because of what their group is about. They're not a pop group. They're not I don't even know. I think they're having an identity crisis at the end of it. You know, and it's just showing on this record that no one just cares about. It just seems to be a cry for attention with Hayley there, and, you know, the whole NoFX saga, and now, oh, you know, this, someone's getting fired on stage because my confetti didn't go off. Who cares? Fuck, it's a show. Get over it. Yeah, you're going to fire someone because your confetti cannon didn't go off during one of the songs? What kind of prima donna are you? Whatever. Anyway, This Is Why was a terrible album. It doesn't make the top 10 list, but it does deserve the dishonorable mention. The last up for dishonorable mentions is going to go to King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. And no, it's not going to be for the Petro Dragonic album. That was a really good record. But they pulled an Uno reverse when they released their album The Silver Cord later this year. And it was just not a very good record. I don't care if their guitarist is a DJ. Nothing can save them from the fact that this record just sucks. And the fact that all their tracks needed extended editions just really proves the point that this is an unnecessary album. If you want to do something different that is outside the parameters of your existing album, or should I say band, maybe you should start a side project and see if it flourishes, because then we will know for sure that this is something. I mean, at the end of the day, King Gizzard fans are just going to rip me apart, because that's what they did at my 5-minute review, and they seem to defend everything that they do, but they're playing it by the numbers. If you put out 25 albums, at the end of the day, most likely a lot of them are going to be average, if not terrible. And this is one of those examples. And you got to think about it like this. If a new fan were to stumble across the band and pick up this record first of all, do you think you would want them to be listening to this album as opposed to something else in their catalogue to get them into their music? So yeah, this is a terrible album and I would not recommend it, and I'm never going back to it. Okay, let's get started with my first on the list of the top 10. Number 10, everyone, a controversial pick, Metallica's 72 Seasons. And yeah, I'm going to say that this album, it just sucks. It's so boring at the end of the day. I wouldn't describe it as a woeful piece of shit, but I just wouldn't describe it too far away from the fact. There are still some kick-ass tunes on here. In fact, I want you to go and listen to my top 20 favorite songs of the year for a bit of a surprise. But, you know, the rest of this album is just so blasé. There's nothing going on in between it, you know. And when the singles were dropping here and there, I just, you know, like I say, Turner, great single, fantastic one to drop and say, we are back, people, here is our new record. And then, you know, the other ones that followed, 72 Seasons, was a bit like, this is okay, I guess, you know. And Screaming Suicide is, again, just another track, and it just follows this whole thing, this whole average set list of tracks. And you've waited years to hear new Metallica material. You know, I think, what was the last one, 2015 or something like that? We've waited 8 years, something like that, since Hardwired to Self-Destruct, and this is what we get. And then the album cover. Take a look at that album cover. What the hell's going on with this thing? Yellow on the front there, this bright yellow and charred black goods. I get it, it's symbolic, I get that. But at the end of the day, who cares? It's just, It's who cares? You know, Hardwired to Self-Destruct perfectly showcased, chaos as per se. And I think that was a really good record at the end of the day by Metallica. But then you go to 72 Season, you're kind of like, what went wrong? You know, what is wrong with the Metallica band camp to put out this boring record? That's what it is. It's such a boring record that ever since I reviewed it, I think I've only gone back to listen to it once. You know, I don't have any reason to go back to it. I've saved, you know, the one or two songs that I want to hear on playlists, and I don't care about the rest of the songs on offer. You know, and it's nearly, what is it, an 80-minute album? It's a long record. You cull off 3 or 4 tracks and you might be a bit onto something here. I just wish that for future Metallica releases, they just kept it short, make it 8 tracks, just keep it at that basic, you know, and who knows what's in store for Metallica in the future, because, you know, at this rate, we're probably going to get a new album in 2030. Who knows? I just hope it's a lot better than 72 Seasons. My number 9 slot is, again, a very controversial pick, and that's going to be Sleep Token's album, Take Me Back to Eden. This is a bit of a weird one, because at the end of the day, I know a lot of people love this record, and I'm just obviously not one of them. But, you know, the lead single from this one, can't remember it now, Chokehold, I think, or no, it was The Summoning. The Summoning was a really great single. I thought, yeah, this is showing promise. And, you know, it was the only single that I heard before the album came out, and then when it did drop, everyone started talking about this record. Yeah, oh my god, this is amazing. You got to go and listen to this. I had people coming up to me and saying, yeah, message me, going, have you listened to this album yet? Have you heard it yet? You know, no, I haven't. But, you know, The Summoning was a really good track. So, you know, I'll be very keen to hear it. So, got around to it. And it really falls apart. Again, it's not a bad album, but it's just the fact that a lot of hype went behind it and everyone's talking this album up. So you got this expectation when you come into the record going, okay, this is going to blow me away surely. But when you listen to it, and or at least my, you know, mind, when I listened to it, it didn't live up to any of that reality. It didn't live up to any part of it. And I'm going, oh, damn it, what happened here? You know, it's showing promise in sections, and I don't know, it just fell apart at the end of the day. And it's unfortunate, because, you know, Sleep Token seemed to be onto something here, and I think that maybe their next release could show some promise if they just focus their attention, because that's what it was. A bit of the record was also everywhere. It was unfocused. It didn't, you know, lack direction in a lot of the songs. It just went from genre to genre very quickly, and it just felt all over the place. So that was, I think, one of the biggest issues as well with the record. Besides the fact that, you know, everyone was talking about it and it was overhyped to the nines, this record also lacked a lot of focus, I felt, and it just fell apart, you know. So, yeah, these two things coupled, you know, these two things together make up the reasons why I'm putting this on the list. The number 8 slot for worst album of the year is going to be with Godsmack. And people, if you have watched our podcast in regards to Live, Listen, Erased and seen Hector on the channel, then you will know that he has a special need to listen to Godsmack. No, I'm joking. He actually erased them twice on the channel on a list that they didn't appear. And I think that kind of reflects the artist that is Godsmack. And it's interesting when you go to Lighting Up the Sky, because this is a band that, you know, sung themselves in such high praises and, you know, said, oh, we don't need to record material ever again because we have transcended the boundaries of such. That's purely because people don't want to listen to your material. In the same breath of air, you know, the band had to cancel their South American, you know, leg of their tour because they weren't selling enough tickets. You don't get to the point of being a successful artist that doesn't need to record material anymore, like Metallica could, for example, without having in the same breath, be going and cancelling concerts because not enough people are turning up. If Metallica stopped recording anything from now on out, they'd be fine, because they sell out wherever they go. If Godsmack were to stop recording anything they did, no one would care. And unfortunately, Lighting Up the Sky, you could have probably, you know, I wish you took that advice under the wing before you recorded this album, because it's so boring, it's so generic, and it's a dull affair. It's like looking at dishwater and just trying to convince you that it is actually good stuff. It's just so boring. I don't care about this record. I didn't review it. At the end of the day, maybe I should have. You know, I listened to it and I said, nah, this is just crap. I don't think I need to add my two cents. At the end of the day, there's a lot of reviews out there that you can watch and listen and them talk about the album. I didn't need to be putting my time and effort into this record because it's terrible. It's a shit ass album that no one should listen to. Sorry, but if you're a fan of Godsmack, I don't think even you can agree that this is a good album. It's woeful. It's dreadful. Yuck. Avoid at all costs. My number 7 slot, and it pains me to say this, goes to Steel Panther, unfortunately, with their On the Prowl record. And, you know, it kind of sucks to add the band to a list of worst albums of the year, because, damn, they are entertaining. You know, I saw them a couple of years ago live, and that fantastic set list they had, highly entertaining. And, you know, even if they toured today, I would probably still go and see them, because I know that they're going to put on a good show. And also, besides that, they're going to play all the classics that you want to hear. Nothing from On the Prowl is what I would call the classics, though. There's just, I don't know, it's one trick pony when it comes to Steel Panther. We are talking about comedy rock, and it's a bit of a pitfall at the end of the day when you're talking about comedy rock, because how much can you really squeeze out of that lemon? You know, they had a pretty good career with the first couple of albums, but after 2 decades of doing this, something, I think it's close to 2 decades now, you know, the joke is wearing very, very thin, kind of like the spandex they've been sporting for the last couple of years. And it sucks to see, but that's always the case when it comes to this stuff. You either evolve or you just disband. You know, and I don't want to see the group do this. But with the, you know, band member, who was it? Saddy Bag, I think his name was, or something. Saddy? Anyway, one of the band members leaving the group, I think he saw it with the writing on the wall and just said, yeah, I know that my time's up here. And it's a shame, you know. They can write some really good hooks. They can play some really sick tunes. They've got that fantastic ability to craft an 80s-style tune and, you know, do these over-the-top lyrics. And you can hear that as well on, you know, the first couple of albums, Feel the Steel or Balls Out, for example. After that, that's where it all starts to fall apart. And, you know, there are way too many tracks, you know, Community Property, Eye of the Panther, Death to All But Metal, 17 Girls in a Row, just like Tiger Woods. Listen to all of those songs because they're funny as hell. But then you come over here just, you know, On the Prowl and they're just trying to make something funny here. They're pushing it. And, you know, it's just not working. None of these jokes are landing. You know, it's never too late to get some. Friends with Benefits, 1987, kind of just harkens back to the finer days of, you know, being in a band, I guess, and all that music. But nothing lands at the end of the day. None of these songs I would consider classics, or I would want to hear them add to a live setting. So yeah, it's a shame. It really is a shame that this album just falls apart at the seams before it really starts to work. And I think the musicianship on offer is pretty average for this record as well, compared to their previous efforts. So yeah, unfortunately, Steel Panther, yeah, getting licked here and put in this spot. Sucks, but you know, next. Yes, the number 6 slot dedicated to Scissoring. Yes, we're talking about Taproot's inconsistently weird record. Scissors, spelt with, I don't know, a forward slash in there somehow or whatever. It's an odd record, nonetheless. Here we are. Our artwork looks like something of a South Park joke. Looks like a bit of a few other jokes. Pretty much the whole record feels like a joke, but it isn't. They're trying to be serious. People, they are serious. I'm super serial, can't you tell? No, nothing about this works. It's a horrendous album that no one should listen to. It just doesn't need to be released, and I just wish they didn't either, because, you know, at the end of the day, what was it? This record, it came together because, you know, the group were like, all right, let's get back together and record. Sure, more power to you to do it, but was it necessary? You know, Taproot was a group that emerged out of the 2000s and stuff that weren't massive to begin with, so it's not like they're kind of rocking their namesake and getting away with it. You know, they kind of got back together for whatever reason they did and decided to make this record, and who the hell knows why? I just don't get it, and this record just shows that the band are just not up for it. I don't know. I just... This whole record just frustrates me. I don't know what to even add to it. Watch my 5-minute review talking about this album, because, you know, it's an easy way to really describe this record, which just sounds like shit. It really does. It's just generic metal that rips on everyone else that is doing it much better in the scene at the moment. And it really does show that the band is just trying to take on this new sound to, you know, play catch-ups, and they're not doing it. They just can't do it. And then, of course, there's, like, the ballad, I think, there was somewhere in here, and you kind of have to wonder why the hell it's even in there. I think it was the song Love Without You. That ballad came out of nowhere and is so unnecessary. Why the fuck is this here? Anyway, I digress. Terrible album. Don't listen to it. For my number 5 slot, it is the ironic title of the album, 152 for Taking Back Sunday. And yeah, it's ironic because obviously the number 152, which appears in so many of their record album covers, and, you know, the mythical number that goes back to callback from their first album. And it's, again, it sucks to put Taking Back Sunday on here because this is a band I really do like. And, you know, when the new album came out, I was pretty excited. I'm like, oh, sweet, Take It Back Sunday. Yeah, let's see what they got, you know, to offer. And then whatever the hell 152 is, I start listening to it, and I'm like, okay, the first track, surely that's just, you know, setting the scene. We're going to get into something here. And then it follows on to the second track. This whole electronica or acoustic-y kind of thing, I don't know. It's a lot of pop. It's like polished acoustic-y pop or something at the end of the day. It sucks. It's what it is. Electronic pop. And, you know, Amphetamine Smiles, probably the strongest song on the album, and that's not saying much because it's not exactly a great tune. And Sold or something like that, you know, and everything else that follows. The greatest thing about this album, the one thing that I can sing its praises on, it's only 31 minutes long. So, you know, you're wasting half an hour of your life listening to this, but it's only going to be half an hour of your life, at least with some of these previous albums on offer, which are much longer, then this one is much, much shorter. And yeah, look, I mean, this might be due to their rhythm guitarist who left a couple of years ago due to substance abuse and various other reasons, and it really does show how much of an influence he seemed to have with the band. Because, you know, I went back and listened to some of the previous albums, like Tidal Wave, and, you know, they still kind of had that knack that, I wouldn't describe the album as great, but it was still a decent enough album. Comparing to, obviously, New Again, or, you know, Where You Want to Be, or, of course, Tell You All Your Friends. But, you know, listening to Tidal Wave, it was a decent effort. And then you go to 152, and you're like, what the hell just happened here? You know, it's taking on this new style altogether. They've shifted their sound, they're changing it, and it's not a sound that I approve of. I'm sure there's a fan base for it. Congratulations. You probably hate the rest of their catalog, because yeah, this is shocking, people, and should not be included in the mix. I never want to hear this album again. The number 4 slot is going to Corey Taylor. Congratulations for making the list twice, Corey. You've done so well. Stand up, have an applause. Yes, standing ovation for everyone out there. Corey Taylor made the list twice. Bloody hell, how bad of a year do you have to release two, not one, but two shitty albums? Slipknot's Adderall EP, of course mentioned earlier, and now CMF2, your solo album, the second one, the one that is just batshit boring. This is just generic rock at its finest core that I would even just look at and just go, I think I'll listen to Nickelback instead. Yeah, I'm saying that right now. CMF2 was such a boring album that I'd rather listen to Nickelback. You know, cheap shot, whatever, at the end of the day. Don't care. It's that shit of an album. You know, and you're looking at it just thinking to yourself, man, this is Corey motherfucking Taylor. Surely there's some kind of venom within this. Nope. Is nothing. It's like listening to Bruce Dickinson's first solo album, you know, Tattooed Billionaires or whatever it was. You're trying something new, points for that, kind of, but you did it with Stone Sour. So, yeah, you're taking on a much more polished, poppy edge to what you did with Stone Sour as your solo project, and it just fucking sucks. And it annoys me, I guess, because you're talking about Corey Taylor, voice of a generation from the early 2000s, you know, voice of the millions, up there with your new, well, I don't want to lump him into the new metal scene, but he was for a very brief stint, up there with, you know, Chester Bennington, of course, and some of the best vocalists around that era, Chino Marino, and, you know, all of those musicians. And, you know, he is such an interesting character. He's very full on. He always has an opinion on something. He kind of reminds me a bit like Henry Rollins, you know, always an opinionated asshole. And at the end of the day, though, he's our asshole, and we love him. We love him for it. That is what makes him interesting and always fun to watch, you know. Same with Henry Rollins. He's an opinionated asshole, but he's fun to watch. But, yeah, no, when you're going into this and you're kind of going, all right, I get it. Corey's changing over time, and that's what happens. But when you're going to see the live performances and stuff like that of him recently, and he busts into a SpongeBob theme song mix, you know, it's just like, you're taking the piss, surely. Yeah, it's funny the first time or whatever in that TikTok video, but does it really need to be covered by your band on stage? I don't know. And if you're curious about that, that was from his Good Things Festival lineup where he performed the song. Yes, that happened in Sydney. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a very bad time for Corey Taylor and co, in particular him, this year. He's had a very shocking year, you know, with all the things that have been, the drama of Slipknot, the Adderall EP, and now this record, and even Knotfest in Australia, which won't be headlining Corey Taylor, it won't be headlining Stone Sour, it won't be headlining Slipknot. It's like one of the very few times that Knotfest has not had any of these bands in the mix. Pantera is going to be headlining it, and I'm all for that. You know, it'll be sick to see. I unfortunately will be missing that concert. I will be out of the country at that time. So that pisses me off to no extent, because I would have loved to have seen Pantera. However, that's life. We just get what's thrown at us. But yeah, it's just shocking to see Corey Taylor falling from such highs and landing in, well, a big old piece of shit. It's kind of like that scene out of Back to the Future 3.
I hate manure.
The number 3 slot is going to Puddle of Mud for their record, Ubiquitous. And yeah, this lives up to its title, doesn't it? Quite a record from the group. And unfortunately, a very piss-poor effort from the band. It's just a shocking, you know, it's just a shocking collection of songs that, you know, is odd. The very first song, I didn't mind it, actually. You know, My Baby, it kind of reminded me of that Stone Temple Pilots kind of sound from probably something like Number 4 or whatever. But after this, it just really falls down a very steep cliff and doesn't stop falling after that, except for the very last track, but we get into that in a minute. You know, and, you know, Dance With Me, Crash and Cobain don't even utter that legend's name in the same bloody sentence. Damn it. And it's everything about this, it's a lot of things that are just wrong. You know, the music is just terrible. Candy, again, another song that's horrendous. But it's mostly the production, and it just strikes me as odd, because this is a band that has a name within the industry, you know, and they certainly have some records that have sold numbers. So why is it that the production is so terrible when it comes to this album? It blows my mind, it boggles my thoughts, and think, you know, why? Why is it that Puddle of Mud have this album out that just sounds like shit? It is a shocking, shocking effort. And at first I thought maybe Bob Rock produced it, because it just sounds so terrible. You know, and yeah, I mean, you're looking over this thing, and again, it's like 41 minutes, which is a bit of a bonus. It's a short album, but who cares? But I don't know. It just shocked me to hear this album. I wasn't expecting anything fantastic from the group, but I wasn't expecting it to be this bad either. You know, and it's just, yeah. At least Poke Out My Eyes is on here, which I believe was like a very early B-side for the band. So it's great to have it as part of a CD collection at last. And I know a lot of people will be loving that fact. But, you know, Puddle of Mud has had just a very... Again, it's another bad year for the group with, you know, of course, the singer being... Going back to rehab, I think. He fell off the bandwagon or something like that. They cancelled. A few gigs were cancelled as well because, you know, people couldn't get him on stage. And it's like, okay, you're shooting yourself before you want to go for a run. And I don't even know how to really relate to this, but... The thing is, obviously, in this day and age, it's very important to not really release the record, but to go on tour. The tour is the important part, not like it was decades ago. You know, decades ago, you would tour to promote the record and sell that, and that's how you made your living, was selling that record. Nowadays, with Spotify and all the rest, you're not making money off the record. You're making money off merch and touring. And, you know, if you're going to release a record and then proceed to completely stuff up your career and, you know, do a bunch of drugs and do your thing and never turn up to a venue, the thing that's going to pay you for, you know, doing more drugs, then why bother? Just get out of the whole game altogether and call it quits. Live off whatever inheritance you have from those songs and just call it a day. I don't know what to make of this. I'm sure it's frustrating for all that are concerned, not just the musicians in the band, but, you know, the promoters, the people who are organizing this, and it's unfortunate. You know, it's not like I wish the worst for Puddle of Mud. I don't mind some of their songs. Control was a pretty good tune. They had some pretty okay songs back in the day, and I'll admit to liking them, but here we are, and they're not in a good way, and Ubiquitous just shows that this is a record that probably should have waited for a little while and probably could have used with a bit more finer tuning. Not saying that, you know, all the production in the world could have saved this record from sounding like crap, it just would have saved it from sounding like such an amount of crap that it is now. Anyway, I digress. Let's move on to the next one. Ah, yes, the number 2 slot, and that goes to 30 Seconds to Mars. Yeah, when Jared Leto isn't trying to climb up a bloody side of a building, he is recording incredibly shithouse music, and that is found on It's the End of the World, But It's a Beautiful Day. You know, and I saw this album cover, and I thought to myself, man, this is looking a bit preachy. Even the name of the record is extremely preachy. And then we listened to it and found out it was a horrendous effort. This polished pop record of sugary goodness. And, yeah, it is terrible. You know, and there was a comment on my channel just recently actually saying that, oh, you know, when I did my review, someone said, oh, I love this record, I love this album, but I don't like their first record. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. If you don't like their first album, you have a good shot at listening to this one and thinking, ah, I like it. You know, if you completely disregard the band that was 20 years ago, then you have a pretty, you have a very good chance of enjoying their new stuff. Because you go all the way back to This Is War, or their self-titled debut album, or A Beautiful Lie, and we're talking like emo rock, we're talking that type of stuff, and arena rock, you know, in particular on This Is War. It was very much an arena sound. They wanted to make this grandiose rock opera type sounding thing, and I think they did quite well with that album. But then, you know, you go to America and this recent effort and it's polished pop bullshit. It's a horrendous album from start to finish. One that I was glad to do my review on and say my piece. And then, of course, I get a message out of the blue from Hector on the Chill Dude on the Couch. And he's like, hey, do you want to go on an episode for Is It That Bad on this album? And I just buried my face. I'm like, now I have to listen to the album again. Thank you, Hector, for making me listen to this album again. It sucks so much, and luckily I haven't managed to erase it from my mind with enough whiskey. If only the same could be said about Jared Leto jumping off the cliff of a bloody stage when he was about to tour for this thing. You know, I don't care what stage mannerisms you do, nothing can save the fact that this album is a dumpster fire of an effort. Time for the number 1 slot, and is it really any surprise that I haven't mentioned Roger Waters yet? Yeah, that's right. The number one slot is going to The Dark Side of the Moon, the Redux version by Roger Waters. 50 years, nearly 50 years after, actually 51 years, I think it was, after the album that was the massively iconic Dark Side of the Moon was dropped by Pink Floyd, Roger Waters decides, hey, you know what? I think I should go back and re-record the album by myself. Screw the rest of the band members. I'm going to re-record this effort. And yeah, the results are shocking to say the least. It's just a shithouse effort by, you know, Roger Waters, someone who wants to take creative control all for himself because, you know, without Roger Waters, who has Pink Floyd? Yeah, well, not like the band continued some 10 years after he left. That, anyway, something else completely different. But, you know, it's shit. It's such a... Why do this? It's so frustrating to even think about, and it annoys me to no extent. You're free to do whatever you want. At the end of the day, it's your music. You did have a part in recording this, but it is so shithouse. Why bother doing what you did? You know, and it's almost, it has opened the floodgates, actually, for other bands now. And this is the thing that we discussed, because again, this was on Is It This Bad? Is It That Bad? With, you know, Hector from the Chill Dude on the Couch. We talked about this album, and, you know, it was shocker. Obviously, it's number one. And one of the questions that we asked was, would this be opening the floodgates, I guess, to other musicians to come back and revisit their works, rework it, and would you want to hear it reworked? I mean, you know, for example, Led Zeppelin. Would you want to hear, you know, Robert Palmer going back and redoing Led Zeppelin 4? No, you wouldn't. Not reimagining it. You wouldn't want him to go back to it and do whatever version he's going to do. But now we get news, for example, out of the group Incubus, and they're going to go back to, I think it was Morning View. I could be wrong on this record. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm pretty sure it was either Morning View or Make Yourself, and they're going to be doing... No, I think it was a 20th anniversary reimagining of the album. They're going back to it thanks to their signing with Virgin Records. And that just made my jaw drop. Like, what? Why? Those albums, Make Yourself or whatever, were really great records. Why would you go back and do reimaginings of the album in a similar vein to what Roger Waters has done here with The Wall? Yeah, maybe the 20-year gap is fine, and we might find that works for Incubus, but, you know, compared to Roger Waters with his 50-year gap, and obviously you can hear his struggling vocals on that, because it's a spoken word, semi-acoustic kind of thing, but I just hope that more musicians don't do what, you know, Incubus and Roger Waters have done. I don't want to hear Black Sabbath Revisited. I don't want to hear Deep Purple Revisited. I don't want to hear any other band revisiting their iconic albums and going, I would love to touch in this and do a spoken word part instead of the guitar solo. Or take the iconic woman out of whatever the song was, you know, The Great Gig in the Sky, and replace her instead with monologue. Why? Why would you do that? You're just ripping out what everyone cherished about the original and shitting on their memories at the end of the day. And I think that shows you, because as well, when you go to his live concert and he ends up reading chapters of his book instead of performing music, that people walk out. And it just blows my mind that he has the hide to say, all right, we're going to be doing a concert and I'm going to read from my book. If I want to listen to the audiobook of you, I would. Go and record yourself on bloody, you know, Spotify or any of these platforms. Go do a podcast like this and rant and do your thing, because I guarantee you can get more hits ranting and rambling about anything else rather than revisiting The Dark Side of the Moon and taking a big, giant, steaming turd on it with your thoughts as to the modern landscape. Because that is what you have done, Roger Waters. That is what you have done for The Dark Side of the Moon. You've taken that prism out there and you tried to push a turd through it to get rainbows popping out the other side. And it just didn't work. It's all 50 shades of brown. Thank you for what you have done. And I just fucking hate it.
That last one really got me worked up there, but, you know, hate can do that. It's good to vent, and that's what I really wanted to do. I don't want to spread really the hate of these albums. I just wanted to vent my feelings in regards to these records, because, you know, it's frustrating to see your favorite band, you know, Metallica, for example, make a record that sucked, or to hear Roger Waters do his thing. Let's not talk about that too much more. But people, make sure to comment below if there's any albums that you thought were absolutely terrible. Comment below and tell me what your worst album of the year was. I am keen to read what you guys have to say. And as always, people, you have a great day and enjoy the remainder of what is left of 2023. Now that we've all vented, let's enter the new year afresh. Stay spicy, everyone. If you've enjoyed this content, make sure to smash that like button, subscribe to us, and stay notified for future music-related content, because it keeps our manager happy at the end of the day. We are also on Discord, Instagram, Facebook, and all those other social platforms if you want to check us out. As always, people, you have a great day, and stay spicy.